Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceable, Hypeable's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and this week I'm here with Laura, Jess, and Karen. Welcome, girls.
Hello.
Hi.
And this week we're going to discuss the latest episode of Once Upon a Time, Into the Deep. This episode was pretty intense, and there was lots of different things leading up to next week's season or winter finale, as they're now calling all of these wonderful things. Okay, so this week's episode was Into the Deep. And it was kind of cool because it's leading us to a lot of things that are going on with the winter finale coming up next week. So basically this week, we start off with Hook, who's returned from his journey in the Beanstalk, and Korra is waiting for him. He asks Korra to give him more time, and she refuses and decides that leaving him without revenge is better than killing him. Then we move on to Aurora, who sees Henry in the fire room in her dream. Snow admits that she has seen the room before and realizes it must be because of the sleeping curse. Aurora goes back under to talk to Henry to give him information and to ask for help. Henry tells Regina and Charming about Korra. They seek help from Rumpelstiltskin, who tells the story of how he was trapped by Snow and Charming. And through Henry, Rumpel basically tells Aurora that they need to find the ink which trapped him, which comes from this octopus or squid from deep in the sea, but he has some in his cell that he was kept in. And then during the dream, the group is attacked by Korra's zombies, and Aurora is taken by the zombies, and Henry wakes up with a burn on his arm because Aurora is pulled from the dream too quickly. Korra, once she's captured Aurora and has her back in the camp, tries to use her love for Philip to get information. However, Aurora stands up to her and refuses to give her anything. After getting a message from Korra's raven, Mulan is ready to give the compass to Korra to save Aurora. There are too many A's in these names. Snow asks for more time, saying she can go under the sleeping spell and get the information they need. She says she will need some of Mulan's sleeping powder to sleep deep enough to enter the world. Mulan doesn't have any, but they go to find the poppies, which I truly thought was going to be Oz, but sadly, I don't think it was. And then what happens in the real world, you have Rumpel says to Henry the reason he was burned was because Aurora was woken up too soon, and they all realize how dangerous it is for Henry to go into that realm again. So Charming realizes that Snow is able to enter the dream world and insists that he goes. And the only way for him to go is if he is placed under a sleeping curse. His whole idea is that he will go and Snow will save him and find him and wake him up with Truelove's kiss once again. Back in the Enchanted Forest, Hook frees Aurora, asking her to tell Emma that his offer to help find the powder still stands. He just wants passage to Storybrooke, that he can be trusted. He says the reason he is freeing her is to deny Korra what she wants, because she has denied him what he wants. Back in Storybrooke, Charming is put under the sleeping spell, the old-fashioned way, which is to prick his finger on a spindle. Charming and Snow meet in the dream world, and Snow realizes that Charming must be under a sleeping curse to be there. He gives her the information needed to trap Korra, but when they try to kiss each other to break the curse, it doesn't work because they aren't really in that world together. So Charming now is under the sleeping curse until Snow can return and kiss him. And lastly, we see Hook, who has waited for Korra to discover Aurora is missing, and Korra is ready to kill Hook until he presents her with a gift. And the gift happens to be Aurora's heart. So now they can control Aurora, and they have someone within the group of four that is constantly in the know and that Korra can control. So it'll be really interesting to kind of see. And that's kind of where they left us off, with Korra handling Aurora's heart in all its glory. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens next week. So what did you guys think of the episode? What was your initial reaction at the end when you have Korra with the heart in her hand controlling Aurora and all these other things going on? What did you think, Jess?
I thought this was a really great episode. I thought that the storylines went really well together. I thought it was nice that we had an episode that focused on what was happening now, and that we didn't have any flashback from the fairy tale world. I thought that was kind of cool. And I was like completely floored when I saw her speaking into Aurora's heart. I did not see that coming at all. And I mean, my jaw hit the ground.
Karen, what'd you think?
Yeah, along the same lines, I definitely didn't see the whole Aurora's heart thing coming, but I thought that was a really great twist. And it's going to be so interesting to see what's going to happen next. And overall, the whole episode was really great. And again, I agree with Jess that it was nice to sort of just focus on the actual plot line and not have to worry about jumping from, you know, the past to the present and dealing with, you know, 800 different storylines like we usually do.
And Laura?
I was actually kind of confused when I saw it. I was like, whoa, how does that whole, like, heart equals megaphone thing work? Because, like, to me, like, we had Graham, who was around the whole first season, and obviously Regina had his heart. And it just, I felt like it was kind of weird that we never saw Regina using it as a communication tool like that before, because you would have thought that Regina would have done that as Graham and Emma were getting closer, but maybe that's a magic end of it that Regina doesn't know about, so maybe it's explainable that way. But I was kind of surprised. I was like, whoa, whole new concept on taking somebody's heart and what you can do. Like, I didn't realize that you would have that much control over the person. I was very much surprised on that. And then secondly, it's not like Cora took the heart. Obviously, the implication is that Hook took the heart, but then you give it to Cora and she can control it. So how does that work? So I have a lot of questions on how that whole heart things works.
Yeah, I do too. Totally with you there.
Yeah, it's, I really liked the episode. I thought it offered a lot. It also offered up a lot of questions that need to be resolved maybe in the winter finale or kind of be explained a little bit more. I don't know. I liked Hook in the episode because I think I liked him because he confuses me. I just can't get a solid read on where he lies. And I always find it intriguing in a character when you really just don't know who they are yet, because it leaves you more wanting more of them and to learn more about them. And I think it kind of highlighted Cora's level of nastiness in a way too. So I kind of liked that, those aspects of it. And I loved seeing Charming and Regina and Rumple work together, because it's just such an odd combination. So those things I thought were really, really fun to see, because we don't really see a lot of that. We usually see either the animosity or the, you know, you stay in your side of the room, I'll stay on my side of the room. But to actually see them working together, I thought was really cool too.
Another thing I thought was kind of fun with this episode is, even though we didn't have any flashbacks, there were a lot of like hints at great stories that they can tell in the future. You know, like in season one, we had the time when Snow was like, or Charming asked her if she ruined the Queen's life, and she was like, yes. And so there were all these stories we wanted to see. And now we've kind of seen all the main ones that we've wanted to see. And so, like, they talked about, you know, Rumple, I thought that you saw Cora's body, that she was dead. So, like, there's a story that we want to see. And him telling them about the squid and the mermaids. Hello, Little Mermaid. I mean, you know, like, there were just all of these little hints at fun stories for us.
They're setting up the spring season.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
I love it.
But it works. It makes us want to keep watching.
Exactly. And those are the things that they kind of pull you in with, like the temptation of what's going to, you know, what other fairy tales are we going to see? And that's always fantastic. Fantastic. So did you guys have any favorite lines from this episode? I thought there were a couple really kind of fun ones. Even if the lines themselves weren't fun, it was the way that they were delivered. Specifically when Snow looks at Charming and is like, you're under a sleeping curse? And like, she's just appalled. Like, what are you doing? Are you kidding me right now? There was something about the way she said it that I just found completely amusing. But did anyone have any other lines that they really enjoyed or anything that they really liked in the episode?
I thought it was funny when Charming was talking about going under the sleeping curse, and Rumple was like, you know, this is really dangerous. There's no telling what'll happen. And Charming looks at Regina and he's like, I faced her. How bad could it be?
That was a good one, too.
I really liked Henry being, like, really wanting to help and wanting to be all sorts of brave. Like, I really like that Henry wants to get in the middle of it. And especially for a kid, like, granted, he does, like, kind of go in, like, full blast. But I feel like he's a little mature than, like, most of your typical, like, kids trying to be the hero kind of thing. But at the same time, I really loved David saying to him, or Charming saying to him, sometimes being a hero is knowing when not to run into the fire. I thought that was was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this episode was really intense. I didn't find like a whole lot of, you know, funny one-liners like we usually do. But the one that I really liked was, well, I didn't necessarily like it because it was really sad. But when Charming says, we always find each other. And Snow says back to him, yes, but we always lose each other, too. Is that our fate? And you kind of have to wonder about it because, you know, they do always find each other. But then again, they always lose each other, too. And it's, you know, where is it going to end? Are they going to end with finding each other for that last time and finally being together? Or, you know, are they going to lose each other for good one of these times?
Mm-hmm. I so have that in discussion notes because I thought that was such a, like, interesting line for her to deliver when she delivered it. So yeah, I think that's a really intriguing idea of, yes, you find each other all the time and they always say that, but will they really? I like that a lot, actually.
I had one more line that I really liked too, and it wasn't really a funny one, but it was one that I guess made me think about things the most this episode. And it was right at the end when Cora and Hook meet up and, you know, he finally gives her the bag and the whole interchange about the present and everything about the element of surprise. And then she said, you know, is that it? And he says, indeed it is. And with that, you will get everything you want. And I just thought that those words coupled with him talking about the element of surprise with the present and just, I mean, it's just, it's too easy. Why did he hang around? Like I'm sitting there going, Cora, you're not stupid. He has another plan. So I'm really curious what the double cross is there. And that by him saying, you know, indeed it is. And with that, you'll get everything you want. Well, maybe you'll get everything you want, but there's a catch to it, or there's a double cross coming. And I just feel like that line is going to mean so much more later on, particularly like with perhaps that Snow should have trusted him. I don't know. I mean that Emma should have trusted him.
Yeah, I don't know. There's so much involved with Hook, I feel like, that we aren't quite getting yet. So it'll be curious to see where that goes. So let's talk about some of the things we saw in the episode, like the sleeping curse. So from what I gathered from this episode is that once you've been in the sleeping curse, when you sleep, there's a place that you go. Even once you're out of the curse, yes? And mm-hmm. It's this kind of fiery purgatory is what it reminded me of. Did anyone else... I'm interpreting that correctly, yes?
Yeah.
So why would you still go back to that one place
everything
is my question.
About it. Yeah, everything about that was so interesting to me that when you're in the curse, like when you're actually under the curse, like Charming was, you go into this place where you're just like a dark hole wandering around. And when you go back after being awakened, it's this fiery room, yet they're still connected, like, in a place. So it's not like they're two separate worlds or any, like, it's weird. So I wonder, like, it makes me wonder what other rooms are in this Department of Mysteries and how they're connected and, you know, like, what would cause you to go to a different place? It's just very interesting. There's so many facets to look into in that world.
Yeah, I feel like there's some symbolism that we're missing. And I don't, like, there's just something about it that nags at me that I feel like I should know, I should have picked up on something, and I'm just not. Because basically Charming broke through a glass floor to fall into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it reminds me of something, but I can't put my finger on it. And so it bothers me, because I'm like, I feel like we're missing something very, like, in our faces, like we should know it. And I'm totally not getting it. But I just think it's curious how the sleeping curse works and how it connects. Like, if you've been under the sleeping curse, you can congregate in the room of fire. And how you could eventually get burned if something happens to the other person that's in the room with you. Like, how is... Like, there's something there that connects all of that. And it just... It's such a curious thing.
That and perhaps... And that and the fact that... I mean, it does seem like there are an awful lot of sleeping curses around. But the fact is that apparently no one else is under one at the moment. Because the only people who have been able to access the room are obviously Aurora and, you know, Henry and Charming, you know, and Snow. So it makes it seem like there's nobody else who's actively there or surely Henry and Aurora would have stumbled upon another person. So I don't know that, is there any other fairy tale that has like sleeping people in it? Because then maybe they would end up in there. I don't know.
Well, the sleeping people would end up where David ended up, upstairs, for lack of a better word. But it would be someone who had been under a sleeping curse tends to go to the fire. So it's like, even though you've escaped the curse itself, it brings you back to the land of nightmares or something, if you will. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of a vibe. Like,
That's what I was wondering. Like, is there anybody else whose like help they could enlist? I don't think there is. Like, I don't think there's any other sleeping cursed people.
I can't think of any.
I'm hoping they explain a little bit more about how it works eventually, because it's just such an interesting concept and the way it kind of links those with the sleeping curse stuff. So I would love to know more about it.
I wonder if they even know, because, you know, this is such a weird place that they are, and there's not that many people that have been there, or at least it seems that way, that are still alive and could talk about it. So I wonder if there is somebody who would know. Maybe Rip Van Winkle? I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm wondering if there's somebody else that they'll, you know, bring into this, a champion sleeper somehow. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I was wondering, too, about the mirrors, because when Charming was first starting to look for Snow, I was thinking maybe he had to go through one of the mirrors to get to her. And I kept flashing back to when Rumpel and Regina pushed Cora through the mirror into a different land. And so I was just wondering if the mirrors could maybe lead to somewhere else.
That's possible, because there are certain versions of like Alice in Wonderland where they have mirrors or portals, and they have the Hall of Mirrors, and it's like Alice's challenge to get through the Hall of Mirrors. So it wouldn't surprise me if there was some connection to the mirrors and portals and stuff like that. These are all questions that they need to get on and answer, because they're driving me crazy. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about Cora, because we all know Cora's end game essentially is to get back to Storybrooke to avenge herself with her daughter, essentially. She's going to take on Regina. That is what she wants to do. So what happens if she gets into Storybrooke? Because next week's episode is making it look like somebody's going back. We don't know who exactly, but it has the potential to be Cora and Hook. So what does Cora do upon her arrival in Storybrooke? Any thoughts, predictions, ideas?
I think it's down to who she hates more, Gold or Regina. I mean, I think Regina even said it really clearly to Gold in the diner. Like, he's like, why would I help you? And, you know, she's like, because, you know, the woman, you know, that we both, you know, hate more than anything is going to come here. We know how dangerous she is. And now it's worse for you because you've got something to lose. And I think that's the kicker to Cora, is she's going to come at you at your weakest point. She'll go at Regina through Henry. She absolutely knows who he is. And she will go at Gold through Belle. So I think that's what she's going to do. She's going to hold you hostage by going after what you love the most.
I think if Cora does make it there, Regina and Gold need to, like, they need to be prepared for that so they can act fast. Because Cora, maybe this is wrong, but I would imagine that it would take Cora a little while to find her legs in Storybrooke, you know, because they kept talking about, like, in the beginning of the season, how magic works differently in Storybrooke than it did in the Enchanted Forest. And so, like, they'll have a brief advantage in that they know this world, they know a little bit better how magic works here. And, like, we'll need to be ready to get her while she's in this weakened state of trying to figure out everything and how it works. Because if she gets to full power, I mean, she's a force to be reckoned with. And even with them working together, like, it won't be an easy thing, especially since she can use Henry or Belle or, you know, any number of ways to get at them.
Do you guys think Gold is more powerful than Cora? Because essentially he taught both Cora and Regina the magic. So he's still the Dark One. Is he still the most powerful?
I think he is, but by how much? Cora's learned a lot, and she's not tied down like Regina is. I mean, even when Regina was evil, she still had a little slices of that humanity left in her. We saw it a few times, especially when she gets back to Storybrooke and she has Henry. But, you know, Cora doesn't really have that. So even if Rumpelstiltskin is more powerful. It might not be that by much, and that might not be enough to really defeat her on his own.
And I think, like, even though Rumpel is incredibly powerful, I think that a lot of his power, a lot of where he gets his advantage from, is from his incredible cunning and manipulative skills and his ability to understand other people and their motives. And it's not entirely clear whether or not, being the Dark One, he gets insight into like future events or stuff. I mean, there's been things that have kind of implied that, but we never found out for sure. So I think that's a big part of where his ability to come out on top and be the most powerful came from. And with Korra coming in, like, he knows what she wants, but he has no idea. Like, he hasn't been around her for years and years and years, so he doesn't know what kind of plan she's coming in with, what she's planning on doing, how she plans on carrying out whatever her revenge is. So I think for a little while, at least, he will be at a disadvantage and Korra will be at a slight advantage over him in the power realm. But then once he figures it out, he might come back out on top and be more powerful than her.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be so tricky. I think as long as Regina and Rumpel somehow manage to stick together, they have a much better shot at defeating Korra. Of course, then Hook comes into play. And, you know, Hook... No, here's my other thing. Hook took a heart. Does he somehow know how to use magic that we don't know about?
Seriously. Yeah.
Or how dark do you have to be? Like, that's what I felt too. Like, that's where you lose yourself. Like, that's a huge step to do that. And, like, how much of his humanity did he lose doing that? Like, that kind of curses you, or it's that much harder to come back to, like, the good side after you take a step like that, I wonder.
I don't know. I just have so many questions about Hook and how he, like, how did, A, who taught him how to do that? Because you don't just go, hey, I'm going to take a heart. This ought to be great. You know, it's not like you know how to do it. No,
right, exactly.
Like, someone has to show you and teach you the way to do it. So who taught him? I mean, is he a double agent? Rumpel actually, like, reconcile somewhere along the line and we've missed it? Or, you know, who taught him? How does he know?
Korra taught him?
Right, or if it's just the world's biggest double cross. Like, I wonder, is it a double cross? Is it not really her heart, and we just think it is? Or, you know, you just wonder. Like, is there a catch? Is there some sort of twist to this that we're not seeing?
See, I initially thought that, but how would everything Korra was saying be projected to be exactly what Aurora was saying?
I know. I went like Harry Potter with it. I was like, look, it's Sonorous, only using a heart.
Yeah. We just can't help ourselves with the Harry Potter references.
I know. I've already made one, too. I had a question about the heart thing. Like, we saw her speaking into it like a walkie-talkie and it, you know, coming out. But then we saw her, like, when Aurora was talking to them, like, what's the plan? And she wasn't being spoon-fed lines. Korra was standing there with the heart, looking at it, smiling. Like, does the heart work two ways? Can she use the heart to eavesdrop on the things that are being said?
Oh, I thought
she can. Clearly, she knows. In the preview, we see that they know where they are.
Yeah, I thought she could. My impression was that it was a two-way street because she's obviously pausing at the right points for a response in the conversation. So I feel like, yes, she is able to hear because that's how she could appropriately say things and answer questions.
That's just crazy. Who knew a heart could do that?
Well, and also, like, who knew a heart could be, like, create zombies? Come on.
Oh, nobody. My God. Not yeah, me. Seriously. Can we talk about the zombies?
Walking Dead meets Once Upon a Time. All our fandoms cross in Once Upon a Time.
I know. I was like, what the heck?
Once upon a time, where all fandoms converge.
Zombie apocalypse in the Enchanted Forest.
Well, that's my thing. I was like, really? Did she? And she, like, took the one heart, breathed on it, and then all the, like, a bunch of other drawers, like, slid open and lit up. All, like, the crosses on the front of them lit up, and then all of a sudden we had zombies everywhere. So I have no idea, like, what her breathing on a heart does to create zombies. But clearly Korra is all kinds of magic that we had no idea about.
Yeah, I feel like there's a book out there just on heart magic. Like, it's insane.
My question about that, too, is, like, what about Aurora? Is she, well, I mean, she's got to still be partly herself because Hook took the heart before she woke up. So when she was talking to him in the cell and she left, she was completely herself because the heart was just in his little satchel thing. But, you know, she must not have any idea that it's happening to her, but it just makes me feel like, you know, she's just a puppet now. She's kind of empty inside, but I guess that's not really the case. I don't know. It's really weird.
I just had this total crack theory. What if she willingly gave up her heart? Like everybody else, it's been, I mean, clearly they don't know what's happening to them. The heart is taken. She's at the point where she doesn't, you know, she doesn't have Philip. She was clearly resisting. Cora was not going to take part in this. You know, she meets Hook, who's come in, like, as a rescue or whatever. What if Hook tells her in some ways, you know, if you willingly give up the heart, we can... I'm wondering, maybe, is that the catch? That the heart was willingly given up? And if it's willingly given up rather than just taken, is there some additional magic going on? I don't know. I'm just total crack theory.
Because he did say he needed a favor before she left.
So maybe that's the favor. She willingly gave it to him.
Well, that would be fascinating. And really, what does Aurora have to lose? As she said, she has nothing left here. Although Cora did throw out the very, very enticing, Philip is in another different area. When a wraith eats your soul, he just deposits you somewhere else. It's not like you're dead. So there was that little bone she threw her. But yeah, I almost wonder, because Aurora has nothing to lose. And she has nothing to live for either at this point. Because, you know, Cora kind of says, oh, you think that they would let you live in their world? How nice. You know, it's very condescending in the way she puts it. So I wonder, that's actually a good theory, Laura. I like it a lot.
Yeah, because this whole time I was wondering, like, even if she would, like, how do you take somebody's heart without them knowing? You know, like, I feel like that, like, even if somebody was asleep and you went in and tried, wouldn't that wake them up? I just see
You would think that major artery extraction might warrant their notice.
The ever practical Jess. Wouldn't what you know if no one was singing your heart? I'm just asking.
Yeah, so that just seems... And you know, Karen, you had said, like, you felt like she was an empty shell now. Well, remember when Graham... Like, he didn't remember that he had had his heart removed, but he kept talking about he didn't feel anything. He felt empty. He just wanted to feel. So we know that having one's heart taken out does leave an impact on who you are.
That's true. So maybe she will notice somewhere down the line, but then again, you know, she might already be feeling that way emotionally because of Philip and everything that she's lost, so... Maybe she won't even notice. I don't know. That's interesting, though.
Only time will tell how this is all going to play out. I can't wait. So what do you guys think, moving on from, like, Cora and her path of destruction and Hook's deceiving everyone, what do you think about Charming's choice to go under the sleeping spell? Because in some senses, I get why he did it, but in other ways, I feel like he's left Storybrooke kind of unprotected, in a sense.
Yeah, it seemed like a really, like, I totally understand protecting Henry and not wanting Henry to get hurt and all that kind of stuff. But it does seem like a really big risk, especially when, and I mean, I guess something worse than Henry getting a burn could happen. But I mean, Gold, Rumple, whatever the heck we're calling these people now, was able to heal the burn on Henry's arm, no problem. I mean, I suppose something worse could happen, possibly that they wouldn't want to happen to Henry, but it does seem like such a big risk.
I did think about that too. And then I thought the bigger point was, is that no matter what they think about each other, the bigger concern is that Cora is coming, and it doesn't matter what you think about anything else, Cora is coming. And they're, you know, if you can get Regina and Rumple to unite on Cora is coming, try to say that like 10 times fast, then I think the rest of the townspeople might kind of rally on that and just put aside sort of petty things, being like, yeah, yeah, no, things are too, like, important right now to deal with anything else. So, I don't know, maybe it's a big enough of an evil that everybody would unite to fight the potentiality of Cora coming.
I hope so, because I mean, my other concern is that people don't trust Regina or Rumple, so if they're the two that are left behind to tell the story, why would anyone believe them? Now, David's cursed. How did he end up, you know what I mean? So there's that whole idea of...
Who's the leader?
Right, who's in charge? Henry's because he was there. In charge.
Right, Henry's but there Henry to vouch could, for him, at least.
But Henry could be cursed, too. They could easily be controlling Henry. So, I mean, that was kind of my, like, I'm like, Charming, you didn't even think it through. You kind of just went, yep, put me under, because I want to see Snow. It felt a little selfish in a way, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there are other people who I would call, like, the voices of reason. Like, obviously, Jiminy is, like, a huge voice of reason. But I don't know that he always has that charismatic, like, leader quality that everybody would listen to. Like, he might be saying things that are really intelligent, but I don't know that people would, per se, always listen to him effectively. I mean, I don't know, maybe, like, different people. Like, I think Grumpy has a piece of it. I think Red has a piece of it. Like, if they all unite enough, maybe people would listen to them. I don't know.
It's all very, I just thought it was a really interesting choice for him to make at this point in time. And like I said, it did feel a wee bit selfish. Like, he just wanted to see Snow.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially after he just said to Henry, like, sometimes part of being brave and being a hero is knowing when to, you know, not jump in the fire. And it seems like he was really, I mean, he's jumping headfirst into the fire.
What is he going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Like, huge risk.
Do as I say, not as I do, obviously, is Charming's rule of thumb.
I still want that compilation video. I swear I'm going to make it of all of these. I will always find you. I have to just say, like, it's getting to the point now. Like, I just want to give, like, a special award to, like, Josh Dallas and Jennifer Goodwin that's just about, like, I will always find you. Because I think they have said every variation of that line that's possible. And even tonight, he had a new way of saying it. I'm sorry, that line always, I mean, I know it's like the major theme of the show, but I every time one of them says it, I just start chuckling. I just do. I really do.
I feel like pretty soon they're just going to have to look at each other and be like, always.
No. We're just going to cut it down to always and make it easy for everybody.
Right. Or they could hold up like a little cue card or something. Be like, you know, with like a little emoticon on it, like how they feel about
it. Great. That's so great. How long do you think that compilation would be?
I don't know. I swear, like, I'm going to, like at some point, like, maybe, like, at Christmas time, I will do this. Because I have like, the DVDs. So I'll, like, go through all the DVDs and figure out, like, how many times they say it. I'm going to do this. This is my life. Yes, I have so much to do. I'm going to do this to go find it. But, yeah, no, I really feel like they have to have said it. Probably at least on average of once an episode, because I think there were some episodes where they actually said it twice, but like they didn't do it in some episodes. So I bet you it's the average of once an episode. So you figured what? There were like 24 episodes last year or 26? I forget.
24.
Okay. So you got to figure last year they said it 24 times, and then we're up to what, episode 8 or 9 this year so far? So. Yeah, so, like, they've clearly said this almost 30 times at this point. How many new ways are there to say it? So,
well, and they always say it. They're like, I will find you. I will always find you. So every time they say it twice.
Oh, the always is added for extra effect in case you didn't get it the first time.
Exactly.
Somebody needs to ask that at Comic-Con, I swear, this summer. If I'm in the Once Upon a Time panel, I am going to get at that mic and just ask them the question, do you ever get tired of saying, you know, or how do you find original ways of saying, I will always find you? I mean, somebody needs to ask that question somewhere along the line.
Did you notice too that even Regina got in on it in this episode? I was thinking about you, Laura. I was like, oh man, now the other people are saying it too.
Oh, so funny. So speaking of the I will always find you comment, this evening it was actually followed up with a much more disheartening comment of, is it our destiny to always lose each other? Is that why we can always find each other? Because we're always losing each other? But not to poke too much fun, but it was really kind of a heartfelt moment where you're kind of like, I think Snow might be on something there. So what did you guys think about that kind of follow-up comment that she had to the I will always find you this week? It was, is it because we're always destined to lose each other?
Yeah, I mean, I did think about, it was nice to actually have that other side of the coin, like, reflected once that, you know, with all of this reunion comes heartbreak. Yeah, no, but I thought that was, like, kind of, Yeah, it was. It's sad. Like he will always find her because they're constantly losing each other. Like, yeah, I mean, it wants to make them say, "Can we just end the cycle? Can we just end the pattern?"
Or is that meant to be their story? Their story is this lost and found kind of cycle that never ends. That could be the point of Snow White and Charmaine. Just saying.
Although there is, I feel like Snow, in a way, was addressing what is a cycle and everything when she was talking about the blame game, because I feel like blame can also be a cycle of just blaming people. And she was saying, you know, trying to tell Emma, you know, you can't blame yourself. You can't blame other people, because if I blame myself, look, this is what I was responsible for, or this is what Regina was responsible for, and this and that. And granted, the message didn't entirely get through to Emma, but I feel like, yeah, like at some point, like a cycle has to end. Like you have to do something conscious to stop the cycle from ending. Now, I don't know what Charming and Snow can do, but yeah, like at some point you feel like hopefully a cycle could come to an end and they could just be happy.
I don't know. This is Once Upon a Time, which I don't know. I don't know if they actually truly have a happily ever after. It'll be interesting to see. So what did you guys think? And this was one of my favorite moments of the show tonight, was when Regina and Henry we're having that moment where she's making a potion and they're discussing magic and how it works and why it's important and how Regina hasn't been practicing at all except for when it's been really important. And I felt like she was really being sincere and really trying. And so it just was a kind of a sweet, touching moment for her and Henry.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked this moment a lot. You know, we've talked a lot this season about Regina and her motives and how she's changed. You know, from not caring and not loving to really truly loving Henry and wanting to redeem herself in his eyes. And I think that this scene made that so evident. I mean, you could see and hear the pleading in her voice. Like, I'm doing this. I'm doing a good job. I'm doing well, right? Like, I'm doing what you asked me to do, right? This is okay. And I just, it was very powerful and very touching to see that vulnerability in Regina and to see how she's trying. I mean, it still is like, is she going to be able to keep this up, especially if Cora makes it there? Like, you know, how is she going to do, or is it eventually going to get too much and the temptation too much? But right now I feel like, you know, she's really truly putting her heart into this and wants to succeed and redeem herself.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it was almost like she was looking for not only acceptance, but for forgiveness from Henry in a sense, for all of the things that had happened previously. So I don't know. I just thought it was such a really nice moment. And I thought that Lana Parrilla did an amazing job with how she kind of portrayed and got that message across. So I just really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, let's talk about Hook for a moment, because we've talked about him a little bit throughout, but like, really, what's his deal? I need to know. What is his end game? Because I have no idea. Anyone have any thoughts or clarification, something I may have missed with Mr. Hook and what's going on with him?
No, I'm so back and forth on this. Like, at one point, when was it? When Hook set Aurora free, I was like, yeah, you know, he's a good guy. And then something in back of my head was like, well, maybe. And I was like, no, he's a good guy. He's doing this for the right reason. And then, of course, you get to the end of the episode, I'm just like, oh, man, he really is a bad guy. But the more I think about it, the more I'm like, well, who is he actually double-crossing? Because he said that he doesn't, you know, he wanted to get revenge on Cora for everything that she did and wanting to leave him behind and betraying him that way. But then again, Emma betrayed him too. So it's kind of like, you know, who's he mad at the most? And, you know, who's he really going to side with in that sense? And I have no idea. No idea at all.
I feel like with Emma, granted, Emma did double cross him, but Emma gave him a way out. Like, Emma did give him a way to get out of there. It's not like, you know, I would say with Cora, if you're out, you're out. That's the end of it, you know? So I feel like he might respect Emma a little bit more for giving him a legit way out. But I feel like his endgame has to involve Hook, because Hook is who took his one, not Hook, sorry, Rumple, because Rumple's who took his one true love, which is granted Rumple's love too, sort of, which gets to be insanely complicated right there. So I don't know. I feel like his goal is to somehow get himself to Rumple, but I think he wants to make sure that Cora is in check when he does it.
Yeah, Karen, I was like you. I was like, is he telling Cora the truth, or is he just trying to, like, work his way through her? Like, what is it that he's trying to do? Because there were moments where you're like, no, I really think that he means well. I think that whatever his intentions are, I don't necessarily think that they're bad intentions towards Emma and Snow and everyone. Like, I really don't. I don't think he's evil in that sense. I think he's driven by revenge. He's driven by the pain that was left when Rumple killed, technically, his own wife. But anyway, do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Is that he's driven by grief and revenge. And so he'll say and do what he needs to get to his end game, which I think is definitely Rumple. But I don't think he has bad intentions towards the other group. I think they're just kind of collateral
at this point. I'd agree with that. I also feel like he's a hands-on type of guy. And by that, I mean that he is not going to be content with somebody else getting Rumple. Like, I don't think he wants Quora to get to him first. I think he wants to take Rumple out with his own hands and Rumple to know that he's the one doing it. Like, I don't think he will be satisfied enough unless he does it personally himself.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. When the show started and he was in that initial conversation with Quora, at first I was like, wait a second, is he going back to her? But then I was like, no, like, I got the feeling that in that conversation he was trying, like, I felt like he was still on, like, the Emma group side and was trying to keep up his cover with Quora so that he could get information to go back to them so they would trust him. And then I just got all confused as the episode went on, and especially after the heart thing. But then when Laura, you came up with your brilliant theory that maybe Aurora gave it to him willingly, and so maybe there is a catch. And I feel like maybe he is ultimately out for himself, wanting to get to Rumple, like, endgame revenge, but that maybe he is trying to attach himself to this group of better people than Quora so that after he has that revenge, like, he can see a future. Because I felt like there was some kind of connection that he had with him and Emma, and so maybe he does want to keep, like, he doesn't want to burn that bridge. For the first time, she made him feel something, like, feel a spark of maybe almost even hope. And so, like, he still has his focus, but wants to be attached to that as opposed to attached to Quora.
That makes sense to me. And I also kind of wonder, maybe he's not double-crossing anybody. Maybe he's setting up two different pathways to go down, and when it gets to the end, he's going to hop on the train for, you know, whoever's actually going to get him to the other side and say to that person, oh, yeah, I wasn't, you know, I was just joking about what I was doing with that. You know, I wasn't really going to go with them the whole time. I wouldn't put it past him to be sneaky like that.
I thought about that. I just wonder how long he would be able to carry that out, how long he would be able to walk that line, you know, because especially, like, once Emma and them find out about the heart thing, like, if there isn't a trick, if, like, he really was giving Quora the heart to whatever and there isn't some trick to it, like, how's he gonna finagle his way into the good graces of Emma and them if they end up defeating Quora?
Yeah, and neither one of them, Quora and Emma, Snow, all them, they're not stupid. They're gonna find out eventually.
Yeah, it's just one of those big, we need an episode to happen to give us an answer. Like, yeah, I think really, we just need to see the show play itself out, but a little more quicker than, like, you know, the next year in 2013, in, like, January or February. I kind of need it, like, next week. Just throwing it out there. But yeah, so I don't know. There's so much that goes on and into his character. I think his character's a little bit deeper than anyone really expected Hook to be. And I really enjoy that about Hook, because he comes off a little bit frivolous and charming and roguish. But I think deep down, he's much more intelligent than what he leads on for a lot of different reasons. And I'm almost wondering if he found someone to teach him magic so that he can fight Rumple. Because he's fully aware that Rumple has power, and he can't do anything about that unless he himself has power. I don't know. We'll all see how it plays out eventually. So a couple other things that kind of popped up in this episode. We have Mulan and her, like, obsessive need to always save Aurora, even though it goes against everything in the group, everything that they're trying. She's totally locked in on saving Aurora no matter what. Does this just go back to a promise she made to Philip? What do you guys think about that? Like, it's almost like she's her guardian, in a sense.
I definitely think it's all because of Philip, and it was her her final vow to him, and, you know, she loves him. What I'm curious about is if, like, what Cora was telling Aurora is true, and there is a way to get Philip back, to get his soul back, and she finds out about that, what is she going to do then? Because, I mean, I imagine her being, like, full force after that path.
That was totally my next point in our discussion, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be a catch to it. I mean, just like there was a catch, like, yeah, she could bring Daniel back, but it's not the Daniel, the version of Daniel that you know and love. I'm sure it's got to be a similar kind of catch to that. Like it's sort of this thing you can't fix dead. You know, it's just like, for all purposes, he's kind of dead. So
But when you have your soul kind of sucked out of you, it's not necessarily the same as being dead, because your spirit is then just taken somewhere else, if you will.
Kinda, I know, like, that sounds really weird. World.
Right.
Like another world with the sleeping curse. Like, there could be a room down there somewhere for the Dementor sucked souls.
Exactly. So, but do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that it's kind of not the same as losing your heart or being killed, because, I don't know, it's just, for me, it's a different category of not necessarily dead, but of not being where you should be. I know that sounds really stupid. I'm not explaining it right.
No, I agree. I agree with that. Even in Harry Potter, like, when a Dementor sucked a person's soul out, the body was still alive. The person was still alive. They were just absent of the soul. So if there was a way to preserve the soul, then presumably there would be a way to put it back in, and then the person would be okay. I guess, right, if the body was kept preserved somehow.
Yes. I'm not,
that was really my question. How, you know, would they put it back in that body? Is that body gone? You know, is it all decayed and stuff? Or would they find another body to put him in, and then he had to go around in somebody else's body or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't remember them saying, like, I don't remember it being like his heart was still beating, and, you know, like, if it was just the soul was gone, but the body was still okay. So if the heart and everything wasn't still beating, and the body was also, like, maybe it's in a sense of stasis, and it would start working again once the soul was in it? Or is it like it will start decomposing, like, as though it was dead? But then what would be the difference between just being dead and having your soul sucked out? So it seems like the body would have to have some kind of a preservation.
I don't know. Yeah. Again, it's one of those, could go any number of ways. We don't have enough information. But I don't necessarily think Cora was lying about that.
Yeah.
It's way too tempting. And because Philip had, like, only seconds on the show, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like there's more for him somewhere. I don't know. It's one of those things.
But I definitely think that Mulan's obsessive, compulsive need to protect Aurora is because it was Philip's last request.
Yeah, I feel like for her, too, it's kind of the same thing that Aurora said. She's like, I've got nothing. I have nothing else. I don't think Mulan has anything else. The only thing she has left that would give her life any meaning is to carry out Philip's last wishes. So that's what she's going to do. I mean, because if she doesn't, what else has she got? What else has she got? She has absolutely nothing.
Which also, I want to know what happened to Ping, was that his name from the movie?
Yeah, what happened to Mulan's merry band of followers? Yeah. Did they wipe out the entire kingdom? Yeah, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. So that'll be, again, another interesting thing to see how it kind of plays out. If Philip is still alive, if Mulan has to go on this quest to find him, what becomes of that ridiculous love triangle? Should that ever? Yeah, so many what ifs. This show just produces what-ifs on the weekly basis to drive me crazy, I swear. Does anyone else have anything to discuss this week?
Can we just talk about Aurora for a second? Because she's kind of awesome. And a few episodes ago, I wouldn't have believed that I would be saying that, because I really didn't care for her character at all. But the thing that I like so much about her now is that she, like you guys were saying, she doesn't have anything. You know, she doesn't have anybody to fight for, to fight, to go back to, and yet she won't give in to Cora or, you know, anything else. She's not a warrior like Mulan. She's not a fighter like Snow. She's just a princess, and yet she does what's right because it's right, not because she's doing it because she knows she can go back to somebody else. She doesn't have anybody else, and I just think, like, that is more brave, I think, than even any of what the other ones are doing. And I just, Aurora is really growing on me, and Selena's going to be really happy I said that, because I know she loves Aurora.
I'm right there with you, Karen. She used to drive me crazy, and I think that that whole scene between her and Cora really showed how much she's grown, because I don't believe Aurora from episode, you know, 3, when she was trying to kill Snow, would have had that same reaction. I think that she would have been like, heck yes, I will do whatever it takes to get my Philip back. And so I think the fact that she, you know, didn't jump at that and remained loyal to those other women shows how much she's grown and how much she's changed. And I think that's great.
Yeah, she definitely grew up. You know, she wasn't into the total, like, pretty princess mode. And I think that's cool. I think it says a little bit of something like, the kind of, like, Aurora that I liked that was, you know, before she was the princess, you know, and, you know, had to fend for herself in the forest with, like, her little fairy friends. Like, I don't know. I like that. She was more of a stand on her own 2 feet kind of person.
But it's a great point, Karen. I think that being in, like, waking up in this world of despair has kind of taught her, and she's learned very, very quickly, that even though something's tempting, it doesn't make it real or right to follow it. So I think it's really cool how she's grown and changed, even over the couple episodes that we've seen her. So I'm kind of excited to see what becomes of Aurora.
Yeah, I agree. I want to see where the arc is going to go.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. So yep. This week's poll was, does Mr. Gold have an agenda with the necklace? And it was a really, really close race, like literally 3 percentage points separated the winner and the second place. So you guys voted, 43% of you voted that yes, he had a purpose that served his own hidden interests. And then 40% of you had said no, he genuinely wanted to help Henry. So that's really interesting. You guys are a little torn about Mr. Gold and what his purpose is. I like it. All right, so this week it'll be, did Aurora give Hook her heart willingly? So did she know? And it'll just kind of be a yes or no. There's not a lot really we can do with that one. So please make sure you check out the poll when you check out the podcast and vote. So next week's episode is entitled The Queen of Hearts. And the description that is posted so far is, Regina and Mr. Gold tried to prevent Cora's arrival in Storybrooke by making the portal dangerous, jeopardizing Emma and Mary Margaret's lives in the process. Meanwhile, back in Fairy Tale World, Captain Hook meets the Queen of Hearts. Now, I guess maybe all that Cora as the Queen of Hearts thing is not accurate, perhaps, if Hook is going to meet the Queen of Hearts?
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, good. Or is it just double talk? Or, you know what? I think it's cool.
But is it a Hook? Okay, is it a Hook flashback?
That's what I was wondering, because it could be, and, you know, there you go.
And that would be how he met and knows Cora, and that maybe is that's how he learned how to remove hearts?
That's good. Or there are two queens in Snow White. There's the White Queen and the Red Queen. So maybe we've just assumed that Cora is the Queen of Hearts, but could she not be the White Queen instead?
You mean Alice in Wonderland?
Yes, I'm sorry. I mean in Alice in Wonderland. Like, sorry, wrong.
So wait, that's
too many. I know, it's like all this crisscrossing of fandoms. But I'm just wondering, could she not be the other one, you know?
The White Queen is good, though.
She was still kind of wacky, though. I mean, they're all kind of, I mean, everybody
wacky
in Wonderland.
As in, like, eccentric, but not wacky as in, like,
evil.
I'm
that's
going
true.
To take heart.
That's true. That is very true. So, yeah, that's a good
There's
point.
Difference.
That's a good point.
So, I don't know. So, I don't know if this is meant to mislead us, and it's really just a Hook flashback, and this is how he meets Cora, or if there really is somebody different that is the Queen of Hearts. So, I don't know. I'm already curious. I was already curious before, like, I even read the description. So, I can't wait for next week. I'm super excited. So, now that we've talked about next week's episode, let's jump into our listener feedback. And you guys know you can always leave us listener feedback in a bunch of different places. We always check our email, which is onceable@hypeable.com, and our Twitter stream, which is @onceuponnews, and any of the Once Upon a Time posts, and of course, the Once Upon a Time forum section. So those are all really great places to leave us feedback, questions, comments, whatever you guys want to leave us. So today we have a couple of different listener feedback comments.
Okay, so our first listener feedback this week is from Joe, And Joe writes in to say, last week you guys were talking about who Neil is, and is he a fairy tale character? Well, I believe he is, and he's Gold's son. But to make this work, I think he would have going through... Sorry, let me try that again. I think he would have going through the porthole into Neverland and turned into Peter Pan. Explains why he is not very old. But then, like in the story, he left Neverland and came into our world. August could have shown Neil his Peter Pan cap or knife to make him believe about Emma. Also, wanted to remind us about the call that August made back in season one when he went to go talk to the nuns, in parentheses, the fairies. And he made the call and told the person on the other line, we have to move up the timetable. Who was August working with? So, I like this theory, personally. I think I've personally been wondering about, like, what was in the box that suddenly, instantaneously made Neil believe. I really love that theory about Peter Pan's cap or knife or something Lost Boy-ish. I think that's an awesome theory. What about you guys? Do you like that part of his thoughts there?
Yeah, I do. And it just makes sense because that always bothered me, like, with the magic beans, that one bean would take Bay to our world and another bean would take Captain Hook to Neverland. And I'm like, how do you, like, what is it with the beans? Like, because Hook obviously knew he was going to Neverland. So I was like, are they color coded? Like, what's the deal? So if the beans somehow took them, the people to Neverland automatically, that would make more sense.
But I really like that idea with the whole chronology and everything. I think it makes a lot of sense of how you could account for the age differences and everything. And I think that ties a lot of pieces in. So I think that's a really, really cool theory on Joe's part. I think that makes so much sense to me. And I think it made sense to all of us. But I think he also does still bring up some other really good parts about, well, who is August talking to and who's he working with and everything like that. I have to say, I'm still pretty much at a loss for this. I don't know. Are you guys still at a loss for that end of it?
I think he was calling Neil just to keep him up on the timeline and letting him know that, you know, we're getting closer or whatever, because who else is on the outside of Storybrooke except for those two that, you know, he would be calling? I mean, maybe there is somebody else, but at this point we just don't have that information.
Yeah, there's some, I don't know, because we have to move up the timetable is such a distinct, like, we have to do something that's going to create this, and Neil can't do anything. Do you know? There's nothing Neil can do about that. So I don't know if it was Neil. The only other person it could be Jefferson in some way.
Right.
Because he's the only one who also kind of has an idea of what's really going on there. So I don't know. I don't know who it could be.
The only other thing it brings to mind is the fact that, so assuming Neil knows who he is, and because August, if we go with this theory, August opened the back of his motorbike and showed him whatever it was that let Neil know who he was. So clearly he knows who he is outside of Storybrooke. So will he still know who he is inside of Storybrooke? Or, like, how does crossing the line work here now? Like, I guess he still would know who he is, but I don't know. Is there more of a game now to it that maybe it's not just all about Emma? Maybe it's about also saving his father. Is that more part of the deal?
More things to think about once again. This always happens. We always have these really great listener feedback questions that always leave us with way more questions. I love it.
That's so true.
Should we move on to the next one?
Sure. William says, it seems that they are hinting to something we are overlooking. At the start of the series, we are introduced to Henry's storybook, which has a lot of the storyline revolving around it and may have some sort of power behind it, and was leading me on to think that fairy tale world in its entirety may have been created by the hand of a single author. Plus, what was August role with the book? How did Mary Margaret acquire it? There may be more to the backstory of the storybook than we realize. I don't think the author could be August, because how would he get everyone's storyline? Or is fairy tale world a separate world that humans have created, having the fantasy of many of the stories we come up with coming to fruition in another world, thriving on the moral that books are powerful things? And would this extend to movies and internet memes? This is really interesting, and there's a lot of questions here, and the one that really jumps out to me is, who's the author of the book? And I agree that I don't really think it's August, but then that sort of just leaves you at, you know, who could possibly have collected all of these stories and everything. But I also like the idea of maybe they come to fruition because books are a powerful thing and they're made up, you know, our stories that just created this other world because we made up those stories. I'm not really sure that it would extend to the movies and the internet stuff, but I think the book idea that, you know, we make it up here and it just kind of pops into existence out there is really interesting. What do you guys think?
We've talked about that some when wondering about like how many worlds exist, you know, with, you know, Frankenstein and the possibility of there being an Oz and Neverland and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, like the whole like Thursday Next or Inkheart, you know, this idea that there's actually a lot of books about. But one thing that I was thinking as far as like the actual fairy tale storybook, what if that was kind of like the, like something that the curse created? Like all of these memories that were taken from the fairy tale creature, the fairy tale people were put into this storybook. Like this is what the curse created to hold these memories. Because, you know, Regina, when she first found out about the book, had no idea of its existence. And, you know, maybe it was given to Mary Margaret somehow, or like wherever she got it from, like the library or the school. I'm not really sure. I don't remember if they told us where she got it, but maybe because when Regina created the curse, Mary Margaret was the one that it was against, like the whole purpose of it was against her. The curse kind of sent it to her somehow or something.
I don't know. I'm wondering if there's maybe like an omniscient force or whatever behind it. Like I'm thinking in a lot of the fairy tales and a lot of mythology, there's the idea of fates, you know, or the spinners, you know, it goes from everything between like, you know, Macbeth to like so many, like the spinning tales and the crones spinning away. And that goes into so many different tales and stories. So I wonder if maybe there's like an element of like the fates have written this book in some way.
Another question I have is, because you remember August, when Henry lost the book, August got the book and he added the story at the end, and then he left the blank pages because he said that the story wasn't finished yet. I want to know if those pages have been filled, like if they were somehow like magically filled up as the story completed, because that would tell us a lot about the book, like if it has to be man-made or if it is something that is filled as things happen.
Yeah, didn't yeah. August change the book, or did he just add blank pages?
Like, well, I think he added a story that wasn't there and yeah. left blank pages.
Okay. I wonder if that's room for Emma's story.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what, like, the story of Emma and breaking the curse and, like, how it all continued on. Because if memory serves, the story that he added was his story about, you know, the whale and when Geppetto bargained for him to be a part of the tree and going through the tree. And maybe that's why that story wasn't included, because he got through the tree before the curse happened, and so he wasn't affected by the curse, so he didn't lose his memories to be placed in the book for safekeeping by the curse or the force of fates or whatever.
I'm still waiting for, like, this whole, like, the whole storybook and stories and everything to be, like, someone, like, just retelling a story to someone, like at the very end. It was just this.
Oh God!
Sorry, I couldn't help it. That's what I keep. There's something, you know, nagging that keeps coming up with that whole idea of it's just a story. It's a bunch of stories within just overarching, like the Princess Bride when the grandfather's reading the story to the little boy when he's sick. That's all that I keep thinking of when we go back to this story, bro. The story itself, the story book, is that someone is telling somebody a story, and that's why it shifts and changes and there are blank pages. And yeah, that's what I keep coming up with.
I really like the idea though of the curse creating the book. That's really interesting. Or even it being sort of alive on its own. That's a really cool twist. And it makes me wonder, like you said, you know, are more stories being added to it? And that could make the book a really powerful thing if the stories are being added to it finished before they actually are finished. It could be a way of, you know, one side or the other taking the book, finding out what's going to happen, and then maybe changing the course of what the book already has down into something else.
Elise wrote in and said, There was one other time that Rumple helped someone without demanding a price. He gave Snow the bow and arrow to kill the evil queen, and when Snow asked what the price was, he just said, "I'm invested in your future." Of course, that did serve his ends because it helped Snow and Charming reunite and fall back into true love, which made his bottle of true love work, enabling him to create the curse, and also allowed Emma to be born to break the curse. There was also the time that he gave the walkie-talkies to Emma to play with Henry. The only motive he could have had there was to strengthen Emma and Henry's bond. I think he has a soft spot for their whole family, if only for the fact that they are so full of true love, he can use that magic for a whole host of things. These are definitely some really good points, and I do think that Rumple does have some kind of a soft spot for families and for families who fight for each other and stick together, because his was so not that. And so he appreciates that, especially with children. But like in these examples, like Elise even said, he did have his own motives behind the good that he was doing. I don't think that there's necessarily like an evil ulterior motive, but it was just like these were good deeds that helped further his own ends. So he still had a selfish motive behind them. So I think that if he was truly helping Henry with the necklace thing, that this would be the first time that he was unselfishly helping somebody for the sake of helping that person.
I also feel like that's the one chink in his armor, is that he does regret what happened to his own son. And I think the clearest way that you can see that regret is that one really awesome scene we had where he was standing at the border and just so infuriated and so emotional that he knew he couldn't cross the line because of what he would risk if he crossed. So clearly Bay is still like the most important thing to him, and he feels that now. So I feel like Henry and, you know, the idea of a son and a son who believes in their parent and, you know, fighting for that child, I just think that's something that resonates with him. So I agree. I feel like that's why he's doing it. And I also feel like Henry is one of the few people who isn't always like incredibly judging him with every single second. Like, you know, everybody else, like in the diner, it's hilarious. Everybody's kind of looking at him, like Granny's looking at him sideways. I mean, like Belle's not, but everybody else is still remembers who he is and what he does. And I feel like Henry's the only one who's kind of willing to move past that and give him a second chance. So I feel like it is kind of genuine in this case.
And he also makes the statement that he and Granny kind of have a sordid past in a way, which again, there's a story to be told there, and I can't wait to see that one because Granny's a little fierce. But I agree with what you're saying, Laura. I think that that's a very good point. And I love Elise's point about how he does seem to care for Snow and Charming and their family in some way, in his own kind of convoluted, strange way. Mm-hmm. But it's still a sense of caring that we don't really see him give to others. So it's an interesting idea behind that there's something, some connection for him with that family in particular.
Definitely.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode of Onceable. And again, I'll remind you guys of where you can contact us. You can send us any feedback, questions, comments at Onceable, O-N-C-E-A-B-L-E, at Hypable, HYPABLE.com. You can send us tweets or messages at Once Upon News. You can leave comments on any of the posts, and there's always great discussions going on in the forums, so make sure to check those out. And thank you guys for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Karen.
Great. Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.